Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with leading experts on the sport, Hall of Fame sportscaster Linda Cohn and national NHL reporter Emily Kaplan. It's every Monday and Thursday. Cohn and Kaplan will bring fans their insider perspectives, reporting, reactions, and analysis to the latest breaking headlines and under-the-radar stories both on and off the ice. The duo will also be joined regularly by ESPN's lineup of NHL voices, current NHL stars, and legends of the game. That's In the Crease podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series, Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams in their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cindy Lauper, and more. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest joining us. Check us out. Check her out. Not us, but her on the 6 o'clock Sports Center. Also, check her out on Debatable. It's a new thing we got going for the folks that gave you Highly Questionable. You can check it out on the ESPN Facebook page, the YouTube page, the Twitter feed, running live between 12 and 12:30. Kind of depends on the day. L. Duncan, what's going on?
What up? Good brother Bomani. How you doing?
I watched the first episode of Debatables with you and Pablo and Dominique, and I thought it was really good, but it started off, and I didn't realize that you had dreams of stardom back in the day. That you was like, because I heard you every now and then, like, you know, break into song on the ESPN properties, and I'm like, oh, okay, I see. But I didn't realize that you, like, had you a little show, a little gig at a club.
Yeah.
You was trying
to
make it happen.
I had a little record deal.
And you had a deal?
Yeah, I had a little record deal. Well, so I had a record deal on the table, mm-hmm. but as I explained on Debatable, it was so bad. The lawyer I had look at it, he was like, do you remember how bad TLC's contract was? I was like, oh yeah, it's like historically bad, right? Like, it's the poster contract for like how you don't sign contracts. And he was like, this is worse. And you're not as talented as TLC. So you won't make enough money to... He was so real with me. But yeah, I tried it out. I have a little demo. It's really embarrassing. I actually found the demo not that long ago. And I played it for O. You know my husband. Mm-hmm. And he sort of sat there with this polite, frightened smile on his face. Like, Jesus. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, so whenever someone says to me, like, you missed your calling. I'm like, I did not.
Actually, I answered the call. I did. I picked up the phone.
I did. And it was a fart on the other end. So no, I did not miss my calling at all. I'm a great karaoke singer and I like, you know, messing around on SportsCenter, but it's evident that I am not a recording artist.
Now, I tell you this though, you had to go for it. Like, I think about it and it's working out well. One of my good friends has a son that when he was born, you know, they did that. Well, how tall is the kid going to be? And the answer was looking like 6'10" something in that. So you know what that meant? You go, yeah. He was like, look, man, we got to give it a try. Like, if he don't like it, he doesn't like it. Yeah. If he's not good, he's not good. But we at least have to look into it, right? And they looked into it, and it's working out. Like, the little homie is also a water polo star, like all of this stuff, right? Yeah, like woo, he got it, and it worked out. But they have to try. I feel like, me myself personally, right? If I were a good-looking woman and could carry the littlest bit of a tune, if I could carry a single note, we go into the studio,
man.
Yeah, you
can give it a whirl, right?
Yeah,
especially in Atlanta.
Yeah, I've seen outright bums out here get somewhere. Not just like kind of get somewhere. Like, imagine this. If somebody had come to you with whatever that song was, what was that woman's name? Like, she kind of the last person that I can think of that we just absolutely knew was whack at the time and had no talent, but the song was the jam, so we just rolled with it. Lumity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you want.
Yes, yes.
Can you meet?
Yes, yes.
What you want to know that?
Yes. We all knew she was whack,
yeah.
But we all knew that was jamming, right?
Yes,
like,
yes.
You had to give yourself the opportunity for somebody to come up to you with that tape.
Yeah.
And be like, yo, this is what it is.
So here's something. So, and I don't know, you know, he could have just been like gassing me or whatever. But when I worked in Atlanta, and this is shortly after I gave up on having a recording career and decided to do, you know, radio and sports, I was working for the Two Live Stews and I sang their intro. Mm-hmm. So one of their listeners was this guy named B-Rich, and B-Rich is just light-skinned, like, brother that you would expect from Atlanta, right? Mm-hmm. Always talking big shit, you know. And so he kept telling me, like, man, L, like, you got to get up in the studio. Like, I got this artist. And, you know, everybody in Atlanta has an Everybody has an artist. He keeps telling me this. And I know B-Rich for, like, a year and a half at this point. He keeps telling me, like, come on, man. You got to come to the studio. I'm like, whatever, B-Rich. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Long story short, come to find out, B-Rich was actually managing an artist. That artist's name was B.O.B. And one of the songs he was interested in at the time, me coming to sort of lace, was, can you pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? He was like, L, I tried, man. I was like, damn it!
You needed to be more particular. Like, right? Like, he should have known enough to know that you just can't be out here awesome. I got an artist. You need to check it out. Because what this sounds like to me is you trying to holler.
Right. It's Atlanta. And like B-Rich was always so cool. Like it was like big brother energy. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like, you know, he was like a listener that he was a part of the dogs and poodles and he would come to events. And like, I'm 20 years old. I wasn't going to do that. But but I was happy for B-Rich. Obviously, they had a really, really, really nice run. But, you know, every time I hear that song, and again, who knows if it was actually ever going to be or if that song was real. But whenever I hear the girl from Paramore, I'm like, I could see how we sing similarly. Like, I could see how he would have heard a voice like mine for that song. So, but it was not meant to be. And alas, I'm here with you now, Bo. So it worked out well.
By the way, what this industry did to the Two Live Stews is criminal. And I feel the need to say that to anybody that ever has. And ain't nobody ever been as successful as they had managed to be in the time that they was there. And then everybody was like, peace.
Like,
it's, like, that's being black in the game right there. Like, anytime really somebody gets out here and starts talking about, like, what the deal is, you being a black sports talk host or anything else, look what happened there.
Yeah, it was so confusing, too, because it's like, you know, again, their star was ascending so quickly, and they were on ESPN, and then they syndicated. And I think, you know, people tried to say that, like, well, that's what sort of ruined the show, is that it was very uniquely Atlanta, and then they syndicated it, and then they lost some of that. But think about how many of our Caucasian brothers and sisters syndicate, and it's like a good and positive thing that they continue to make money. They use it as a reason to sort of, that I remember, you know, at one point when I was, you know, in Nesson in Boston, and like Ryan Stewart was entertaining coming there, you know, but he was like, but I can't talk about hockey and stuff. And I was like, wow, like to think that everything that you've done, you'd be here, like potentially doing the same job that I'm doing as I'm like starting out, just felt, Bo, if there's one question I get throughout my career more than another, it's like, what happened there? And I don't know.
Yo, it is the wildest thing in the world to me. Cause I mean, I know what it is to be a black in radio in particular. Cause I will say this. They were syndicating that from like 1 to 3 because they would come on after my show when they first got the syndication thing. And boy, let me tell you, them first couple days that they had put them on, them phone, what the hell is that?
What is that? Right? Are they barking?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah, like people, like as soon as they hear a black, it's so rare to hear a black person that's not an athlete on sports talk radio, that when it happens and people can't figure out who the person is, they just freak out. And then when they freak out, whoever the little programming director is or anything else, they freak out because they fundamentally believe that their audience is racist, right? Like they believe that y'all can't handle it. And so then they get ready to bail on anything. And then next thing you know, these two dudes that had been everywhere and had done well, forget about trying to get on national. They couldn't get on in Atlanta.
Right.
As black as Atlanta is, those dudes, because you listen to sports talk in Atlanta, it don't feel that way, right?
No, yeah.
They couldn't get on.
It is not representative at all of Atlanta. And you're right. I mean, you know, like in their heyday, the Stews, like I mentioned the dogs and poodles. For those who don't know, like imagine like a traveling caravan of fans of a show that will go literally anywhere you go. I mean, middle of the day, Stone Mountain, JR Crickets, they are there. Like wherever that show went, they would show up in droves. So it felt like they had really a huge following, and for it to your point, just sort of dissipate with like no explanation as to why. Again, like there's not some inside industry secret that I know of anyway. I don't hear people say things mm-hmm. like, oh, they were insufferable. I worked with them for, you know, a little over a year. They were not that way at all. You know, so I honestly don't know. I don't know what happened.
I need more of you singing. That's what it came down
it
to.
In the doghouse. Yeah. That was the intro.
Hey, you said that before. This is at Chili Pepper. I remember Chili Pepper.
You remember like, Chili Pepper?
I remember Chili Pepper. Chili Pepper
was like at Buckhead, right? Levels. Yeah, it was like, remember it was the size of like, it was very small, but it went straight up. So there was like 9 levels. Mm-hmm. So you would just, that's how you partied. You would party right. just looking down balconies. It was right. awful.
You'd have been like the person from Atlanta that was performing and maybe somebody knew and somebody didn't. This may have been like one of the first times. This is my sophomore year that I went to a club and it was a local act that I didn't feel like I knew who they were, but they were up there. But it was the Young Blood. So like I soon knew who they were later.
Okay.
With one of my favorite Atlanta club moments, Sean Paul on the mic. Hey, you ain't at a crew, get off the stage. And if you won't get off the stage, we get you off the stage. We don't need no security. That stage
Sean Paul.
Cleared out.
Out, of course. Oh my gosh, dude. Oh, that's amazing. It's so Atlanta.
Yeah. Sean Paul, I don't know, and I guess every city and every place like has somebody like this. Sean Paul was the ultimate, everybody in Atlanta knows somebody like dude. Like Sean Paul, like that is probably a common nickname of the 23 years ago or so era. Because in your crew, there was a dude I went to college with. He was our Sean Paul.
Yeah.
He was exactly Sean Paul.
He was Sean Paul. You know who I was thinking about the other day, Bo, who just in Atlanta. And it, again, I love coming on your show because we can talk about like real Atlanta things. We were talking about like the originators of the mask. And I was talking about how, you know, we spend time in Tokyo and like they wear masks like all the mm-hmm. time. And then I thought, who was the first person I really had a lot of contact with that wore a mask a lot? And I was like, oh, Young Dro.
Yes.
Young Dro used to always wear a mask. Like at the time, like Nelly had his Band-Aid and like mm-hmm. whoever had their leg pulled up. And he always wore a mask to everything. And Dro would just show up at it did it a coat drive. Like anything random from like, you know, an Alex Gidewan party to a coat drive indicator, he would be there with his mask on. Mm-hmm. And I just love that he's so uniquely Atlanta and people just don't know the contributions Dro has.
Also, Young Dro became like the next level past Detroit where he just show up as stuff.
Without the belt.
Yeah, like never unwanted. As the way somebody put it was to me when Pastor Troy showed up as something they did. Never unwanted.
Yes.
But definitely uninvited.
Yes. Yes. It's like he knew. Him and Raheem had this little, like, you know, niche for finding places where there would be a PA, a microphone, and a crowd. And yes. Anytime those three things happened together, it could be at a grocery store, it could be at a concert, whatever, they would find that thing happening and they would announce themselves there. And yes. It would always be welcome because who didn't want to listen to the most beautiful girl in the world, yes. right? Standing yes. in the parking lot of Greenbrier.
Yes.
I want to hear that. You know what I mean? So they would put on these little mini shows and we would always look forward to that as a radio station because it would be like unintended and unpaid entertainment.
Yes.
You know, we'd like hop on the radio on the phone, you know, and those like street hits and be like, yo, Dro's in the parking lot right now performing so high. Maybe T.I. will come. We start like calling people out. It was free entertainment. It was great.
Yo, I caught up with Pastor Troy at the At Last concerts in 2014. I saw him. I think he was just in the crowd that day. And he pulled me aside like, hey, man, you got to get me on that show with you and them Mexicans. And I was like, you know, they're Cuban, but okay, yeah. You know. And so one day I looked up on Instagram and Troy was like at the Clevelander or just in Miami and around. And I was like, yo, you know, you won't stop through because I'm like, yo, we can get him to rap with Poppy, you know, do no more playing GA
oh,
with Poppy.
Yeah.
And of course, Pastor Troy shows up. And of course, the belt was with him.
There it is.
And my thing about that is maybe he check a bag. But, like, that's a lot of room in your carry-on. I have owned that belt before. Like, you got to configure it and do all, you got to wrap stuff around it. He ain't going nowhere without the belt, just in case somebody want to see him.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, there's a couple of things that are going to always happen with Pastor Troy. He's going to have that belt, and he's going to tell you who his clique is, okay?
Yes.
It is DSGP.
Yes. Yes.
He will tell you every time who he rides with. When I was doing those obnoxious-ass Hawks videos, I used, you know, No Mo Play and J in one of them. And I knew, like, as soon as I do anything somewhat Atlanta on my page, Pastor Troy is always, you know, in the comment section, like, get him, sis. I know that no matter what, he's got my ATL back. So, of course, you know, he hops in there like, tell him who you with. It's just so ridiculous. I mean, to see the people, some of these people I don't even remember have, like, you know, Instagrams or that I used to love them. But I did something not that long ago. And in my comment section was like, tear the club up, thugs. I was like, they have an Instagram?
Wow.
That was such a specific time.
Yes.
You have an Instagram?
Yes. Now, I would stick with Atlanta a little bit. Some of Atlanta got mad at me over the weekend.
Oh, what'd you do, Bo?
You know what I did.
Oh, okay. I know what you did.
But all I said was that Matt Ryan's arm was shot. Which I believe is self-evident.
I was going to say, how is that controversial in any way?
Because the Matt Ryan capes exist, I understand. And, like, they don't understand. I love Atlanta, but they think I hate Atlanta because of my feelings about the sorry little football team. And I just don't understand how they can't understand how somebody would have these feelings about the sorry little football team. But they get so mad at me. And I just said Matt Ryan's arm is shot. I once said Matt Ryan wasn't a Hall of Famer, and that turned into a measure of controversy with the Atlanta folks.
He's not.
No, he's not. I mean, that's okay. They'll retire his jersey. Like, that's pretty noble.
Fine. Yeah, ring that's of fame in the Falcons, it'll be fine.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Man, I've watched a handful of Falcons, just a little bit of time with the Falcons this year. I'm so glad I don't do that, man, because that is not going to be a positive experience for them folks this year, man.
That's what I'm trying to say is, like, when you say, you know, you love the abuser, you hate the drug, right? So I'm obviously a Broncos fan, but I'm from Atlanta, so I love Falcons fans. I understand how much they want for Matt Ryan to be their guy, right? Like, it took them a long time after Mike Vick to fall in love, and they finally did, and they realized Matt Ryan farts in the bed. And that's okay? Because he's got a lot of really other great qualities. But being a great quarterback isn't one of those qualities. So we need to start thinking about the future and moving on, right? This idea that, like, every single year, they somehow think that he's just going to, like, go back to what was an anomaly. That MVP year was the anomaly. Stop saying, like, can he return to form? He
that
is showing
form.
You his form. That wasn't his form. This is his form, okay? That was a one-time thing, clearly. I don't know why it's so controversial to just say he is a solid quarterback. He's a top 15 quarterback who now is getting closer and closer to 40. And needs to probably be put out to pasture. Like, do you want to keep doing this until he's Ben Roethlisberger and he quite literally can't move? Like, come on.
But that's the thing, man. People struggle to notice it when quarterbacks get old because they don't really get slow, right? Like, that's the
Fair.
Way we tell that somebody's
slow,
getting
yeah.
old in every sport is that they get a little slow. But that's not what really matters with quarterbacks. And so Tom Brady got these folks fooled into thinking that anybody can play like, hey, look at Tom Brady. Maybe Aaron Rodgers can play another 7 or 8 years. I wouldn't bet on that, homie.
No. But again, you give Tom Brady the benefit of the doubt because the man has 7 effing rings. All Matt Ryan has is what? 1 MVP year and literally the most embarrassing demise in football history. Like,
yeah, he played a part in it.
Thank you. And so for you to not even think, even when Tommy was 4 rings in, what did they do? They go and draft Jimmy Garoppolo because at the very least, they were thinking about their future. Matt Schaub was your backup quarterback until 6 months ago. Like, oh, this is nuts. I just don't understand what they're doing. I don't get it. It's not that I care. I don't care about the results of the Falcons. They're the hometown team. It'd be great if they win. I don't really care. The Broncos are who I live and die by. But it's just, it's so hard to explain the inexplicable. Like, what are you thinking? And then to get fresh blood in here and for Arthur Smith to go, no, Matt Ryan is for sure the guy. What are you looking at?
You're looking at the owner who says Matt Ryan is for sure the guy. That's what that means. That means that the boss man told you. But I forgot. Oh, Broncos, I forgot about that. Were you mad when Lamar went and got them a couple yards like Fangio was mad?
No, come on. No. You know, I love, though, that Harbaugh barked back and was like, I wasn't aware of a 16-point play since we only care about results. I was not mad at all. And that's just, you know, Fangio to me is like, he's one of those guys that's like, you want to like him. I'm not sure he's likable. Like, I want to. I think that I like him more because reports are that he's the only one that was really from the beginning all in on Teddy Bridgewater. That sort of, you know, the front office said, okay, like, that's going to be your guy. I don't know if Teddy is the guy, but it was evident by looking at Drew Locke. He is not. So right. If there was any apologies left for Drew Locke, good God, that man can't play the quarterback position at all. But yeah, you know, when it comes to the Falcons, Bo, I don't know. Arthur Blank is such a good man. And I think weirdly enough, that's exactly why he's a bad owner. I think he's so loyal and he's a good man. He wants to do the right thing. And that is not always the best football decision. And his loyalty is just, I got to
say
this, though.
I can't say he no bad owner because the Smith family owned that team before Arthur Blank. Now, that was bad owners. Like every whiff and taste of success that, you know, something to be proud of outside of 1998, they go on this. But look, I went around. We talked about that other stuff. You know what I mean? You know what the people want to know about. You know what people want to hear about. How your man Urban Meyer play himself so badly? Because I watched on Debatable, and you guys made the point that I was going to make, which was that story was going to go away if he didn't get up in front of the microphone.
100%.
And he got up in front of the microphones, and he also went up in front of the team and didn't do that right. And now Urban Meyer, like, what are we waiting on, man? This one is over.
It feels like it's headed that way. And it's funny because everybody sort of keeps like talking about like the creepy hanging out at the bar with young women kind of thing. And I'm like, that's not the issue. The issue for me is because, yes, like while some people in the press are saying, you know, he didn't make vows to me. That's not what this is about. This is about the idea that like he has shown a complete lack of leadership because his decision making is very poor. And the least concerning thing Urban Meyer's ever done is, you know, have someone back that thing up at a bar. The most concerning thing would, of course, be covering up for someone who committed domestic abuse against his wife, or hiring a racist, or hiring his homie, you know, trying to get his homie a job despite having never played that position in life. Those are why Urban Meyer's leadership skills should be up for debate, not because he was in the bar. I've actually never heard him boast. You're better at this than me, so you would know. I did not know it was a thing that coaches don't fly back with their team.
I didn't either. That was the thing that happened to him.
I've never heard of that.
It never happens. That's what's getting him here, is that it never happens. And I was actually surprised by that part on a Thursday night game.
Yeah.
You know, I thought maybe, you know, given the circumstances, no, nobody does this. That's what the beat writers all jumped on. It's like, you did what?
Yeah. Because, yeah, well, with Thursday night games, you still typically, what, you fly home, you go and look at film. You know, right. Your off days are not until usually, what, Saturday or Sunday. So you right. go to work the next day typically. And now you're 0-4 and your team needs the leadership more than ever. That was questionable to me. Like the dirty old man stuff, like it is what it is. There's plenty of those, but I don't know.
This is the question that needs to be raised here. And I didn't even go dirty old man there because them clips we got was so short. I got no
they
idea.
They really were. You know, yeah. Like, you know, you take a picture. People take pictures yeah. all the time. Like, yeah, that's, yeah.
People were sending me that and I was just like, I can't do this. You know, right. like this is just something that is only noteworthy because you've heard of the person.
Correct.
Right? It's not about the acts. I was just kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm not tripping on that. This is the question I think that Urban Meyer needs to ask himself, and that I think is actually going to demonstrate itself to be like a real question that ties to other things, which is, this is your own restaurant.
Yeah.
This is your establishment.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world did somebody film you and put out the footage in your spot? Mm-hmm. You command so little respect
yes.
that even at Urban Meyer's Pint House
in Ohio State territory,
right, that you got to worry about people filming you doing that again. It wasn't it, like if he had been out there, like, you know, like it was a party in the 11th grade and right. he laying on his back on the ground and, you know, she's scrubbing yeah. the ground and him at the same time. Right. Like,
holding his arms.
Right. He leaned up against the wall and he doing this one right here. He's doing that right there. He started pulling his shirt up.
No.
Like, you got your undershirt showing. And she like, he wasn't even doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
that is so
she wasn't holding the ground. She wasn't doing none of that. And somebody was like, I got you. And they did get him. And it's only because people don't like him. Like, yo, people don't love Bill Belichick. But if that had been Bill Belichick at a bar and some girl was in front of him as such, like the other video I haven't seen people talking about, like the one, the extended footage or whatever. But we would laugh if that was Bill Belichick sitting there looking kind of stone-faced.
Absolutely.
We'd
be
laugh.
Like, oh, look at him getting it.
Right.
Yeah.
People just don't like, and it's wild people don't like Urban Meyer. I don't want to say he hasn't done anything to anybody because I don't like the way that feels, but I think you get where I'm coming from. Like, there's some people that folks hate, and I fully understand what they put their finger on. With Meyer, is just, I don't rock with that dude. Because
right.
they're not that mad about that Zach Smith stuff. Not that they shouldn't be mad, but I just don't believe they that mad.
No.
About that stuff.
Well, clearly.
They
yeah.
just don't like him.
Okay. let me play psychologist here. Do you think there could potentially be an element of self-destruction here on Urban's part because he sort of wants this thing to fall apart?
He knows. He knows this is over. But I don't think that he thought that when he went to that bar and that happened, that it would be the tank out move. And I don't think, and this is what got me, is that Mike Silver did a thread on Twitter yesterday about this. Urban Meyer came to meet with the team because he became the distraction and all of this stuff. And I'll get to that, but I want to stop with something. Pat McAfee made a very interesting point on his show where he talked about he got busted for public intoxication once. It was in the news or whatever, and he walks out. You know, he's got to come face the team. Now, he's the punter, but still, he's got to come face the team. And when he walks in, basically everybody's like, oh, here he is, like sarcastically, derisively, and all of that stuff. But that's how they treat people they respect. If they had respect for Urban Meyer, he would have walked in that locker room and they would have just all been laughing. They were like, I see you, coach.
Okay, coach. Right.
He would have apologized or whatever, but they would have been like, yo, they're tripping, whatever. But they don't like him. So he comes in, he cancels the whole team meeting. He's supposed to meet with the whole team. He canceled that, and I don't understand this for the life of me. He cancels that and decides to do this with each position group. My dude, you going to do this 7 times when you only had to do it once?
1 time. Why?
And then did it today. I just saw something that apparently when the team met, he did the apology today. And they like, dog, it ain't even really that serious. We just kind of needed you to own it.
Yes. Isn't that weird when like, that's definitely happened to me in life where someone like takes something that is mildly agitating and then makes it so annoying by bringing it up time and time again that you're like, you're making it uncomfortable and weird, and now I'm having a problem.
And they thought that the way he handled it, per Mike Silver, just wasn't a way that you handle it if you're worthy of respect. And so he said they laughed at him as soon as he left, and he knew it. They're laughing at you. But the thing about football players, like, it's hard to get a basketball team all together because basketball team would be out on you immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Football players want to believe in the coach. Like, the relationships between football players and coaches at the median is much different. They look much more for the guidance. Nah, man, they all out on you. Everybody is out on you, and he can't quit because then he can't get his money. Jacksonville doesn't really want to fire him. Nobody wants him there. He doesn't want to be there, and they just going to be out here losing. And Trevor Lawrence is like, oh, and you brought Trevor Lawrence into
this.
Thank
you, Bo.
That's where you lose the team right there.
Yo, he pulled a, rest in peace, rest his soul, a Kobe, right? Yes. Where it was like, wait a minute. Shaq was like, well, I was just minding my business. And he's like, I told Trevor that at his bachelor party. What are you talking about? Stop talking. What? If I'm Trevor, I'm like, how did I get hit with this shrapnel? What? What happened?
Right. And so Urban Meyer just bummed out. He's so clearly and visibly unhappy. He can't handle what is a regular level of losing in the NFL. Like, I'm not judging him for that part. He's just not built for it. He takes the losses way, way, way too hard. I'm like, the bye week? Does he quit at the bye week?
When is their bye?
Let's go find this out, because I know they got a, I mean, obviously they have a London trip because everybody thinks that's where they're going to go. So it looks like looking at
their
this.
Their bye is after October 17th.
Yeah, yeah, because that's when they go to London.
So week 7 is their bye.
Stick around. Ooh. Stick around. Stay in London. See the sights.
Yeah. And listen, if he thinks it goes down at his little terrible bar, it definitely goes down at the pubs in London.
Oh, my God, man. He just, he blew it. And nobody got his
back. Way to spoil the bag. Like, why to spoil the bag? I just don't understand. So here's my question, though. Because now, of course, everyone is calling him, you know, the next Saban. You know, he was the laughing stock of the NFL, too. And now he made everyone pay in college. Do you see that sort of future for Urban, where the college level will just sort of welcome him back? He'll go to a school, he'll get back to his winning ways, and we'll sort of move on.
No, it's over. I think it's all the way over.
Oh, you think it's done?
I think that any school that would be willing to hire him would be beneath his standards. And I think this is an important thing to note with Saban. The Dolphins didn't want Saban to leave. The players didn't want Saban to leave. Like, Saban's got all his problems and everything else, but the problem that Saban had was when he told them he wasn't leaving and then he did leave. Mm-hmm. Urban never has had these guys' respect. Like, Saban is a much better people person, quiet as is kept, than Urban Meyer is. And so, like, people with the Urban Meyer is going to go to USC, and I've been saying this repeatedly, USC has been too scandal-ridden, and particularly with scandals involving violence against women.
They can't hire him. And currently, I think she's president, but she's the chancellor at North Carolina before she got there. And I know enough to know if she's still there, he ain't going to be there. People are like, well, they're going to move her out. That's fine. They can't hire him. Maybe there's somebody who can hire him, right? Like LSU, they're not going to be able to hire him after they fire Ed Orgeron. And I'm almost positive they're going to fire Ed Orgeron. Because Ed Orgeron's got that ignoring sexual assault thing that just happened not too long ago that you're going to hear a lot more about as LSU loses more and we start saying why it is that Ed Orgeron is ultimately going to get fired.
Fair. It also feels like you're giving them a lot more credit as if like we don't see people who sort of cover abuse just move and shift and all over the college landscape anyway.
I think they move and shift, but I mean, quiet is kept. It really is usually a move down.
Fair.
I mean,
okay.
Urban Meyer didn't leave Ohio State because he wanted to.
Sure.
They would have fired him if they could, except the paperwork wouldn't let him do it. And then he got that one more year and then he went out of there. Like, so an example I give is Marv Albert, who had his situation in the late 90s. And I encourage you to look it up because it's probably far more heinous than you remember it was at the time. Because at the time, all we talked about was Marv wearing lady draws, mm-hmm. when in reality, Marv committed a heinous act then. Anyway, NBC wound up bringing Marv back, and then NBC lost the contract. Marv never got back on over-the-air television doing basketball again. Like, when ESPN got that contract, Marv was never the voice of the NBA. Marv had a good job doing it with Turner, and that makes it look like Marv stuck around, but Marv absolutely took a step down and could not get back. You see what I mean? And so LSU, they might be able to get a guy like that in the next hire.
But this next one, back to back.
Yeah, they can't do it right now with USC, and especially with USC, because that's a different fan base. Like, that's a different booster base. They can't do it right now. No, Urban might be able to get back on television and get out here and talk about this stuff, but no, I think it's a wrap for him. And by the way, you had a great run, buddy.
It sort of felt like that from the beginning. Like, I'm not sure what's left to prove or why you want to jump to the NFL. It's interesting because Omar has a really good friend, a play cousin, who played for Urban at Bowling Green. And when it was announced that he was going to Jacksonville, he was like, yo, this is not going to work. He was like, the Urban Meyer I know, his style, his approach, the way he talks to men, it didn't sit well with like college kids at times. He's like, it will not sit well with these grown men. Like, it's just, and he's like, I don't know what he has left to prove. You know, he sort of always counted him as a very ambitious man, but he sort of did all of the things that you would assume you'd want to do. Again, despite the fact he was sort of being pushed out, he sort of got to leave gracefully, right, on his own terms. He was making great money doing TV. Like, why? I guess I don't understand what all this was about, especially if this is what you were going to bring.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it was probably ego, want to be able to prove that you could do it on that level. And this was a uniquely attractive situation, right? Team's got a bunch of draft picks starting from zero, and you're getting Trevor Lawrence. I could see all the things that would lead him into doing it, except the thing is, coaching kills him. Like, it literally takes days, years off of his life doing this, but I guess this is what he does, right? Like, as much as we could tell people, like, yo, why don't you just go sit around and do nothing? Because then you're just sitting around doing nothing. This is what he wanted to try to do. Now, what I thought was, I figured that eventually he would recognize that, like, okay, so in college and the places he's been, going 8-4, bad. If you're 8-4 in the NFL, we got some excitement about how this season might end for you. And I thought that he would get an understanding of, like, hey, man, it just goes a little bit differently here. Players do it all the time, right? Trevor Lawrence has lost more games this season in the NFL, I think, than he's lost in his life.
Yeah,
you know?
Right? At least so in just, high school and college.
Yeah, you know, so he just figured, yeah, okay, you know, I thought he'd make peace with it. And when I saw the way he was sweating in preseason losses, I was like, oh no, this is over. This has no chance of being successful. I had people in my mentions yesterday that are like, you're really going to write him off after four games? He deserves a chance to do more. I mean, I don't really get too caught into this concept of deserve, but I'm not talking about what should or shouldn't. Like, I am now at that age. Hell, I am 41 years old. Now I am now old enough to really but my dad would be like, nah, that ain't gonna work. Why not? Hey, man, I'm just telling you, man, that ain't gonna work.
I'm just telling you. Right? Yeah, it's like experience. Listen, wisdom. That's what tells me it ain't gonna work. Wisdom.
I have seen this before. Now, let me ask you this. You ever seen anything like Kyrie?
Oh, God. Bo, we all know. We all know the consequences, or we know someone that has suffered some consequences from hotepping, okay? And for those that are listening and don't know, hotepping is, you can Google it.
Yeah.
Please, God, don't go to the Urban Dictionary. But hotepping is basically like where Facebook sleuths, you know, confirmation bias. They think up these wild fantasies, right, or conspiracy theories and then go find it somewhere deep in the annals of Facebook and confirm it. I've seen it cost people jobs and whatnot, but like not significant ones. This could cost this man $15 million in the best case scenario. That's assuming they let him be a part-time player. Worst case scenario, the max contract, $300 million in his career. What the is happening? I think, did Howard Bryant say he's a contrarian without a cause?
Yes.
God, that was, that nailed it.
Yo, so I try to be careful when I talk about the Hotep situation, because I tell people this all the time, that I look back on it. But when I was younger, like in, you know, when we lived in Atlanta when I was younger and a little bit early when we were in Houston, I definitely was surrounded by many a man that one would term Hotep in this day and age. So they were really at that point really just Pan-Africanists, but you know,
sure,
you know, it evolves. But now, man, a lot of them cats that we find to be ridiculous are some of the most important people, I feel like, honestly, to my development in life, because I always say, if you are going to raise black children, you have to raise them with a basis in African history first, because otherwise everything is just in the context of the American experience, which comes with its own problems, right? So, you know,
right,
we learned about Africa and all, you know, look back, some of that stuff may not have been the truest, but like part of my self-esteem comes from them cats. However,
sure,
when I saw Kyrie on the media availability, when he did it on his Instagram Live and he had an ankh earring in, I was like, oh, that's where he is in this. And that people be like, well, I got unk tattoos. What you trying to say? I didn't say nothing about your unk tattoo. And ladies, I'm not talking about your unk earrings. I'm talking about that dude with an unk earring. I'm assuming two of them, because that one was in the right ear. You know what I'm saying? People typically go with the left. He had an unk earring in there. And I was like, oh, that's where he is in his journey. That's where he's progressed to. That's another one. I'm 41 years old. I synced it. I synced it. I know
I
it. Like, you think about that for real. You see cats with onk stuff all over the place. How often you see somebody go so far as to have an onk earring? You don't see that too much in a dude. And when you see it in a woman, she got a on and on, you know?
Yeah.
Cypher Key rolled like a Rolling Stone rap on.
Yeah.
You know what
uh-huh.
I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that's how that goes.
She getting her body on.
Yeah, so I talked to somebody who's kind of around the Nets a while ago. And I was like, yo, man, so when are Durant and Harden gonna get tired of this?
Right.
And his response was, man, he gonna be there. You sure about that? Are you positive about that? Are you sure he's gonna be there? Because now he's really willing to walk this up. Andrew Wiggins was like, nah,
Never mind.
He still sound like a fool, but he was like, he sound like a fool with a jab. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
These cats, you really gonna try to just not play at home? So this is what they would have to be. He can't play at home. He can't practice in New York. He would just basically have to show up on road trips.
Yes.
And they try to develop some sort of rhythm with him after they just had last season where they had no rhythm because everybody was always in and out and all of this. You think you gonna trust Kyrie to just show up to not even home games, road games? He's
Thank
gonna
you.
Show up to road games.
Make it make sense. But I also wonder, Bo, why the Nets are taking such a like, you know, supporting Kyrie sort of stance here. This is absolutely insane.
I mean, it's
sort of nuts. Like, why aren't they being stronger about it and being like, if we are clearly not going to sign someone as a part-time player, yeah, what the f*** are we talking about
because
here?
Because he still has Kevin Durant, right? Like, Kevin Durant has still got his back. It's something I always remember about Durant. When I first started doing Highly Questioned, because the first year or the second year, we did an interview with him. And, you know, Dan.
Yeah.
Dan wants to talk to him about the story we had just heard about the first time they had met Michael Beasley. They were at some community center playing basketball, and Beasley left early or something. And after they got through playing basketball, it was supposed to be pizza. And then they come out there, and it ain't no pizza because Michael Beasley has ganked them for the pizza on the way out the
took
door.
It.
Classic Michael Beasley, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're, you know, trying to get our yucks out of Kevin Durant for that. And Kevin Durant was like, hey, man, you got to understand, we just kids, you know, we still young, we just kids, we still trying to figure this out, you know, so I think you need to cut some slack. And I remember that just because I got where he was coming from, didn't think it really applied in this case,
sure,
but I understood where he was coming from. But what I saw in that is from him a tendency to try to protect people that he feels are being picked on by everybody else. And I think, this is my guess, I don't know this, but like it looks like he feels that way about Kyrie. And therefore, if he's got Kyrie's back and Kyrie is the guy who put the whole thing together, then the Nets are going to ride with this to have, you know, as long as Kevin rides with it. The question is, how long can Kevin ride for this? And I just can't see how you can ride for this for long at all. This is absurd what is being proposed here.
It's nuts, especially because I think, aren't there first like six games on the road too? So I think that Kevin's gonna at least publicly support him or do whatever he needs to do until it starts affecting their bottom line, which is of course them losing. Because at the end of the day, like, they're competitors. Kevin Durant knows that he's half a foot size, you know, away from potentially being in the NBA Finals and whatnot, right? Like, who knows what could have happened? They need those three guys, or at the very least, they need to prepare for a season without them. They can't keep doing this back and forth, in and out. I don't understand what Kyrie is a really good player and a really complimentary player to that big three, but he is not generational. Like, you don't think that the Nets can still compete in the East if Kyrie Irving's not on that team? I don't understand what they're doing. I don't get it. I don't understand why they're kowtowing to this behavior. You know, it feels like, you know, we had a lot of this BS with the NFL too, right? Leading up to the season, until the NFL said, you know what? Okay, cool. We're going to let you do your research. Here's the deal. It's going to start affecting game checks. And magically, Bo, magically, 95% of the league was vaccinated, just like that. And I just feel like the NBA is going to have to get to a point too. They have largely been able to escape it because I think 95, 96% of their league is vaccinated too. It's the Kyrie. It's the name recognition, right? That is the big issue for them at this point. If they don't start getting a harder line stance on it, then we'll see. You know, they're hoping that it impacting his pocketbooks is going to be enough to get him to come around, but we'll certainly see. It was enough for the NFL. I just think that Kyrie is very sophomoric and immature in many ways. And, you know, outside of the ego and the being picked on and feeling like he's, again, to what HB said, he's a contrarian without a cause. He just wants to go against the grain. And we'll see how important that ideal is to him.
He thinks that
he's smarter than everybody.
It's not just that. You know what? It's like, you remember the Kobe system commercials?
Yes.
I never knew when they aired. I was like, so the Kobe, is he in on the joke here? Like, I can never tell. Kyrie is like, if it's the Kobe system stuff, except he's absolutely not in on it. And somebody needs to be Kanye West in the Kobe system commercial and just be like, what the f*** does that mean, Kobe Bryant? Right? Like, somebody needs to be that person with Kanye. Like, at any one of these press availabilities, what he says, be like, yo, what does that mean? Like, no one ever responds and just be like, could you, like, explain that out a little bit more?
Yeah, they just ask him more questions because they want to just hear more crap. But it's like, nobody has ever been like, can you please explain? Or, you know, Kyrie, did you go? You know what I want anyone to ask any of these guys? Just a quick question. Did you attend high school, public high school, Kyrie? You did, right? Because I know that you did. Did you take your vaccines in order to go to high school, Kyrie? Your child, did your child go to school, Kyrie? If you vaccinated your children so that they can go to school? Ask them this, because of course they all have. Because here's the thing, Bo. Here's the thing. When it comes down to actually having to raise your children, you would rather stab them with anything than have to actually keep them at home and homeschool them. So parents have no problem signing their kids up for any vaccine that's recommended, right? Because the prospect of never being able to send them to camps, daycares, or schools is too much. If that is too much for parents, then how Kyrie Irving just can't settle and land on the idea of taking a vaccination in conjunction with everything else he takes in his body and doesn't know anything about is just befuddling to me, because I would be willing to bet that his child, I'm pretty sure he has a kid, right? That his child, if he attends school, has been vaccinated. So what are we doing here?
Here's what I do give him credit for. He ain't show up with no fake card. I feel very confident saying it's some dudes showing up with fake cards.
You think
right?
so?
No question.
You don't think they're doing any due diligence? They're not checking lot numbers? No. You know you can publicly search and people see if people have vaccines.
Yeah. Now, I think they probably are doing that, right? But I feel like somebody, there's no way that league got 450 people and ain't nobody tried to show up with no fake card. Somebody has tried to show up. And that's the thing I'll give both him and Wiggins. Hey, Wiggins talked his talk. But then in the end, when it came down to it, yes, he went ahead and did it, right? You know, okay, cool. You know, I don't think he's making a lot of sense, but he had a point he wanted to make. He tried to make his point. Okay, there we go. Kyrie, that was thinking, I was like, you know, he's not going to do it. We might try to get around it or whatever it is, but he could have been fraudulent about it. This is the dumbass hill he's going to die on, right? Perhaps literally.
Yeah, do you think he's going to? I mean, do you actually think, if you were a betting man, had to make a bet right now, is Kyrie going to get the jab before the season?
No, not before.
No.
Not before.
Not before. So he's going to ride this thing out for at least a little while.
Yeah, I mean, and look, man, before the season, let's be clear. That's like, what, like 18 days or something?
I know. It starts really soon.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that, I don't know what's going to change. I don't know who the person is that can get through to Kyrie and be like, come on, man, what you doing? That person might exist. I just don't know who it is.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's nothing new to say at this point. You know, maybe the person is Kevin Durant. Like, maybe the approach they took was, like with Draymond Green, it became clear to me and hearing him talk about like how it went with Durant, that blow up and everything, that Draymond would have apologized, except they told him to apologize. And once you tell him to apologize, he ain't going to apologize.
Of course.
And so they needed, yeah, maybe they needed Kyrie to come to his own conclusion. But now that he hasn't, that now you reached a point where somebody got to go put his ass against the wall.
But again, with his personality, does that seem like something that he would respond well to? It feels that's what all this is about. The whole world going, come on, Kyrie, you can't be this stupid. And him being like, watch me.
But if I say, like, say I can't.
Yes, I can. Say I can't be this stupid. It's like, it's nuts. It's like, it's actually crazy. And so, you would think at some point someone's got to be like, you're kidding, right? Like, this flat earth stuff is fine. And I know you enjoy this. And I know you like doing this and stirring controversy and all that stuff. But you have to be kidding. Like, you don't actually believe this, right? Because I can't honestly believe, and I don't know Kyrie from anything, but I can't honestly believe that he cares this much about it, that he would potentially forego $300 million to just die on this hill. I don't get it.
Counterpoint, Ankh earrings.
Okay, enough said.
Like, I feel like that, like, everything
that's
like,
him.
I just don't get it. Why would you do this
We've
sort of thing?
Him.
Counterpoint, Ankh earrings.
Touche.
There we go. All right. That is Elle Duncan. Check her out. 6 o'clock Sports Center. Also, check her out on Debatable, all ESPN streaming apparatus. You can check the show out. It is very good. I really want you to check that out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.